Chapter 4
Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, the Imam of Prayer. This chapter reviews the life of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam and gives an overview of the political instability during his lifetime. It also highlights the Imam's critical role in guiding the Muslims and reconstructing Islamic society. Before the government of Yazid. Birth. Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam, also known as Sajjad, was born on the 15th of Jamad al-Awwal in the year 36 Hijri in Medina. His mother was Shahrbanu, the daughter of Yazdegerd III, the last Persian king of the Sasanian Empire. She was captured as a captive, then brought to Medina, where she married Imam Husayn alayhi salam. Imam Sajjad's mother passed away shortly after giving birth to him. Historical records suggest that Imam Sajjad was the second son of Imam Husayn after his older brother Ali Akbar. During the government of Imam Ali, Imam Sajjad, who was born during the government of Imam Ali alayhi salam, was only 4 years old when his grandfather, Imam Ali, was struck with a poisonous sword. When Imam Ali was on his deathbed, he passed his sword and his Holy Quran to Imam Hassan alayhi salam, as directed by the Prophet, peace be upon him. He then requested Imam Hassan to pass these items to Imam Husayn after himself, then asked Imam Husayn to continue passing these items to Imam Sajjad. Imam Ali then held the tiny hand of Imam Sajjad, telling him to pass these items as well as his and the Prophet's greetings to Imam Sajjad's future son, Muhammad. During the government of Muawiyah, Imam Sajjad grew up during the long caliphate of Muawiyah for about 20 years. Of these 20 years, 10 were during the imamate of his beloved uncle, Imam Hassan. The other 10 were during the imamate of his father, Imam Husayn. Imam Sajjad witnessed Muawiyah's oppression of the Ahlul Bayt, the progeny of the Prophet. He lived during a time when he heard cursing of his grandfather, Imam Ali, from the pulpits all around the Islamic territory by the order of Muawiyah. Imam Sajjad also witnessed his uncle, Imam Hassan, suffering from the poison which took his life. During the government of Yazid. The uprising of Imam Husayn. Imam Sajjad supported his father with the uprising against Yazid. he migrated with his father from Medina to Mecca, then from Mecca to Karbala. In Karbala, Imam Sajjad was only 24 years old in Karbala. He became sick a few days before Ashura. On the night before Ashura, while still very sick, he witnessed that his father, Imam Hussein, allowed his companions to freely leave and save their own lives, but none left. On the day of Ashura, while Imam Sajjad was struggling with his illness and repeatedly falling unconscious, Imam Hussein came to see him for the last time. He embraced his beloved son and said his final words to him. He also gave him a precious prayer to recite during a sorrowful calamity. This prayer was passed down from Angel Gabriel to the Holy Prophet and from the Holy Prophet to Lady Fatima salamullah alayha, and finally to Imam Hussein. When Imam Hussein was leaving for the battlefield and Imam Sajjad saw his father's loneliness, he leaned on a stick, attempting to walk, and proceeded to help him. While he was struggling to stand on his feet, Imam Hussein asked his sister to take care of Imam Sajjad, saying, "The earth should not be left without a representative from God." In the afternoon of Ashura, after Imam Hussein's martyrdom, while the tents were being attacked, looted, and set on fire, Lady Zainab, Imam Hussein's sister, asked Imam Sajjad about what the women and children should do: stay in burning tents or escape the fire. Imam Sajjad's first ruling as an imam was to command them to escape to the desert and save their lives. Lady Zainab herself stayed with Imam Sajjad to protect him from the enemies and fire. When the enemies saw Imam Sajjad and his severe condition, they left him to die from his illness. However, they looted his tent and even stole the rug he was laying on. On the day after Ashura, Umar ibn Sa'd and his troops, who were responsible for the tragedy of Karbala, stayed in Karbala until noon to bury the bodies of their men. They then took the surviving family of Imam Hussein and his companions to Kufa. The number of those captives is estimated by some to be around 61 people. The enemies tied their hands and made them ride camels without saddles. As the imam was the eldest male among the captives, the enemies tied the hands of Imam Sajjad to his neck to afflict him with more suffering. Since the imam was very sick and could fall, they also tied his legs to the underneath of the camel. When the captives passed by the bodies of Imam Hussein and the other martyrs, they wept and cried with hearts full of pain and sorrow. In Kufa, 2 days after Ashura, the captives arrived in Kufa. Ibn Ziyad, the governor of Kufa, ordered the captives and the severed heads of 72 martyrs and Imam Hussein mounted on spears to be taken throughout the city. He wanted to instill fear in the hearts of the people of Kufa. People came to the streets to watch the captives. Lady Zainab began to speak to the crowd such that people were reminded of her father, Imam Ali. She condemned the Kufans for breaking their allegiance to Imam Hussein and killing him. She told them, "You have ruined your life in this world and the hereafter, and have become deserving of the wrath and punishment of God." Imam Sajjad then started speaking and introduced himself as the son of the one who they had martyred. He condemned their betrayal. He asked them how they could face the Prophet now that they have destroyed their hereafter. People started crying and said, "We are ready to submit and follow your orders." The Imam said, "I will not trust you anymore. Do you want to do the same thing that you did to my forefathers? You just killed my father. My only request to you is not to support our enemy nor claim to support us." Ibn Ziyad gathered the people in his palace. Imam Hussein's head was brought before him, filling him with delight. With his stick, Ibn Ziyad kept hitting the teeth of Imam Hussein. Later, the captives were also brought in. Ibn Ziyad addressed Lady Zainab and praised his own victory. He asked her, "How did you find God's action against your family and brother?" Lady Zainab responded by saying, "I didn't see anything but beauty. The family of the Prophet is blessed with the rank of martyrdom. Soon, you will face them in the court of the Almighty, and then you can see who overcomes." This conversation triggered Ibn Ziyad's anger. He decided to kill Lady Zainab, but someone advised him not to degrade himself by killing a woman, and he reluctantly accepted. Ibn Ziyad then pointed to Imam Sajjad and asked, "Who is this young man?" They said, "Ali, son of Hussein." Ibn Ziyad said, "Didn't God kill Ali, the son of Hussein?" Imam Sajjad responded, "I had a brother whose name was also Ali, Ali ibn al-Akbar, and your army killed him." Ibn Ziyad said, "No, God killed him." The Imam responded by reciting the following verse of the Quran, 39:42. "God takes the souls at the time of their death," implying that you killed my father and God took his soul upon his martyrdom. Ibn Ziyad angrily said, "How dare you talk back to me?" He ordered the beheading of Imam Sajjad. Lady Zainab quickly embraced Imam Sajjad and said, "I swear by God, I will not let him go. You must also kill me with him." Upon seeing this, Ibn Ziyad said to leave the Imam be, since his illness is enough to kill him. He then ordered the imprisonment of the captives. 3 days after Ashura, upon becoming confident that Umar ibn Sa'd and his troops had left Karbala, the tribe of Bani Asad, who lived nearby, came to bury the martyrs. The bodies were headless, so they were unable to recognize them. Miraculously, Imam Sajjad came from the imprisonment in Kufa and arrived at Karbala. He guided the Bani Asad tribe on where to bury the martyrs. Imam Sajjad himself buried the body of his father, Imam Hussein. Ibn Ziyad sent a letter to Yazid to request his orders. Yazid ordered him to send the captives and the head of the martyrs to Damascus, Syria. Ibn Ziyad only sent the captives from Imam Hussein's family and relatives to him, whose number is estimated by some to be around 25. The captives were taken on camels and their hands were tied with ropes. Imam Sajjad's hands were tied tightly to his neck. During the journey, Imam Sajjad did not speak to anyone but his family. He constantly prayed, glorified God, and recited the Quran. The journey to Damascus. During the journey, the heads of the martyrs were transported in boxes, and upon arriving at any city, the heads would be mounted on spears in front of the captives, If the family and loved ones of the martyrs cried, the soldiers would beat them with spears. The caravan was taken from city to city to show off Yazid's power, and the captives were presented to the people as rebels. When the caravan approached the city of Mosul, the governor ordered the city to be decorated to celebrate and welcome the caravan. However, when the people found out that the head of Imam Hussein was coming, they prepared an army of around 4,000 people to fight and capture the head of Imam Hussein to be respectfully buried. This news led the caravan to redirect its route and not to enter the city of Mosul to avoid conflict. After this incident, the caravan moved expeditiously towards Damascus. The Syrian region was seized during the government of the second caliph, who had appointed Muawiyah as the governor of Syria. He stayed in power for 42 long years until his son Yazid took over. Thus, the Syrians were only familiar with the Islam spread by Muawiyah's propaganda. Many Syrians did not know that the Prophet had left behind his family. Thus, the closer the caravan got to Damascus, the more people grew in favor of Yazid's government and celebrated his victory. In Damascus. After about 12 days of traveling in hardship as captives, the caravan finally arrived in Damascus. This was the place Imam Sajjad recalled as the most difficult part of their captivity since Ashura. To expose the captives, particularly the ladies, they had to enter from the most crowded entrance of the city. They also placed the spears with the mounted heads in the middle of the caravan to draw more attention to the women. Yazid prepared a gathering in his palace and ordered the captives' presence. When he saw the heads approaching him from a distance, he said the following poem. The Prophet killed my family, the Umayyads, in the Battle of Badr, and I took my revenge by killing his children. The heads of the martyrs were brought to Yazid while, as usual, he was intoxicated. He was amused and used profanity to insult the head of Imam Hussein. The captives were brought inside later, still tied to one chain. When Lady Zainab saw the head of her brother Imam Hussein, she started weeping. The people in the palace became emotional and started crying as well. However, Yazid was delighted by his victory. He asked for a stick and continuously hit the teeth of Imam Hussein. Yazid then addressed Imam Sajjad and said, "May God bless the one who killed your father." Imam Sajjad fearlessly said, "May God curse him." Yazid became furious. He wanted to kill Imam Sajjad. But God's plan altered the situation. During the discussion of Imam with Yazid, Yazid justified his actions by reciting the following verse from the Holy Quran, 42:30. Whatever misfortune befalls you, it is because of what your hands have earned, and yet He, God, pardons much. The Imam rejected Yazid's justification and responded, "Our situation is instead described in the Quran in 57:22. No calamity occurs on earth or in your souls, but it is in a book, even before we make it happen. That is easy for God." Later, Lady Zainab delivered a bold speech to Yazid, condemning him. Yazid imprisoned the captives in an old and wrecked house, which could not protect them from the heat or the cold. His intention was that the house collapse and kill the captives. In that prison, the beloved daughter of Imam Hussein, Ruqayya, passed away after enduring all the atrocities. Imam Sajjad had to perform his little sister's burial rites in the same place. To flaunt his power to the people, Yazid took Imam Sajjad to the Mosque of Damascus and appointed a lecturer to deliver a sermon against Imam Hussein and his father, Imam Ali. The Imam rose up and asked to enlighten the people with his words. Yazid resisted, but his near ones insisted that he allow Imam Sajjad to speak. Imam Sajjad's most important and critical sermon in Damascus was delivered in this place. The Imam praised God and said, "We as the Ahlul Bayt have been bestowed with 6 blessings and 7 excellences from the Almighty. The blessings are knowledge, forbearance, chivalry, eloquence, courage, and the love of believers for us. The excellences are that Prophet Muhammad, Siddiq Imam Ali, Tayyar Ja'far ibn Abi Talib, Asadullah, Hamza, Lady Fatima, and the leaders of the Youth of Paradise, Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, are from our family." The Imam then continued, "Allow me to introduce myself for those of you who don't know me." The Imam glorified his lineage from the Prophet, Lady Khadija, Imam Ali, Lady Fatima, and Imam Hussein, and described them with their best attributes. The people were influenced by Imam's sermon and began to cry. Yazid feared the effect of Imam's words on the hearts of the people. Suddenly, he interrupted the Imam's speech by ordering that the azan, the call to prayer, be recited. When the azan reached the verse of bearing witness to the Prophet, the Imam looked at Yazid and strongly said, "Is Muhammad your grandfather or mine? For if you say he is yours, then you're a liar. And if you believe that he is my grandfather, then why did you kill his family and capture his descendants?" When Yazid proceeded to lead the noon prayer, people dispersed, and not many follow him in the congregational prayer. The Imam's words were so powerful that Yazid faced objections from the Syrians. Thus, Yazid had to change his policy towards the Imam to save his own government. He delivered a speech for the Syrians and said, "I did not kill, nor did I order to kill Imam Hussein." And then he blamed his governor Ibn Ziyad for the horrific tragedy. During the Imam's short stay in Damascus, someone asked the Imam about his life. The Imam responded by comparing his life to that of the children of Israel, when the Pharaoh killed their sons and enslaved their women. Arba'in, the 40th day. Yazid asked the captives from the family and relatives of Imam Hussein if they wanted to stay in Syria or return to their homes in Medina. They asked him to allow them to gather and mourn for the loss of their loved ones. Thus, one of the first gatherings of mourning for Imam Hussein was set up in the heart of the Umayyad government. The captives wore black, gathered people, and mourned for 1 week. Then they decided to return to Medina. Yazid gathered a caravan to respectfully return the captives to Medina so the people would think he was innocent. On their way to Medina, the captives requested the caravan to stop in Karbala. Exactly 40 days after the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the caravan arrived in Karbala. They met Jabir ibn Abdullah, one of the Prophet's close companions and the first visitor to pay his respect to the grave of Imam Hussein. This day was called Arba'in, or 40th day, and became an important day on the Shia calendar. Many believe that during this visit, Imam Sajjad returned the head of Imam Hussein to Karbala and buried it with the rest of his body. After a few days of mourning, the caravan continued its journey to Medina. Return to Medina. When the caravan neared Medina, Imam Sajjad requested a poet to go and recite a poem for Imam Hussein to inform the people of Medina about their arrival. The entire city of Medina was overcome with grief. The grieving people came out of the city to receive the caravan. While weeping, the Imam delivered a sermon. He praised God and mourned Imam Hussein's martyrdom. The Imam reminded the people about the Prophet's command of loving and respecting his progeny, the Ahlul Bayt. The Imam said, "Even if the Prophet had commanded a war against us, it could not be worse than the tragedy that we have endured." The people of the caravan had returned to Medina after about 7 long months, but without their loved ones. They visited the tomb of the Prophet, where they sorrowfully cried and mourned. In Medina. When in Medina, Imam Sajjad visited Salama, the Prophet's wife, and requested the items that Imam Hussein had entrusted her with prior to leaving Medina. He received the swords of the Prophet and Imam Ali and other holy scriptures that were special belongings of the Imam of the time. Imam Sajjad also received a scroll from his sister Fatima that Imam Hussein had entrusted to her on the day of Ashura to pass on to Imam Sajjad. During the rest of Yazid's government, Imam Sajjad and the Prophet's family, Banu Hashim, remained in deep sorrow and grief. Their pain was such that they only wore black clothes and never ate hot meals. The grief was so heavy on their hearts that Imam Hussein's sister, Lady Zainab, and his wife, Rabab, passed away shortly after the tragedy of Karbala. During this time, the Imam's activities and interactions were under intense surveillance by the government, as Yazid feared an uprising from the Imam to seek revenge for the tragedy of Karbala. Due to this, the Imam only had 3 companions. Eventually, Imam moved outside of Medina for a few years and lived in a temporary residence. He isolated himself and limited his interactions with the people. The Imam's isolation from society protected him from Yazid's threats, since Yazid was looking for any excuse to eliminate him. During this isolation, the Imam occasionally traveled in secret to visit the hidden grave of his grandfather, Imam Ali, in Najaf, and his father, Imam Hussein, in Karbala. The well-known supplication of Aminullah was originally narrated by Imam Sajjad during a visit to Imam Ali's grave. Reviving Karbala. After Ashura, for around 34 years until the end of Imam Sajjad's life, the Imam always wept tears of sorrow for the tragedy of Karbala. The Imam is one of the 5 divine characters who wept the most along with the prophets Adam, Jacob, Joseph, and Lady Fatima. The Imam was constantly reminded of Karbala. Every glance at water would evoke tears in his eyes. He used to fast during the day, and at night, upon seeing food, tears would roll down his cheeks. Once, the Imam saw a butcher slaughtering a sheep. He asked him if the animal had been given water before it was slaughtered. The Imam's eyes used to fill up with tears as he would say that the grandson of the Prophet had been slaughtered thirsty by the Euphrates River. Someone once requested the Imam to come out of grief, to which the Imam responded, "Prophet Jacob had 12 sons. God only hid one, Prophet Joseph, and he wept for 40 long years, while he knew that his son was alive. Why shouldn't I cry when my beloved father, brother, and 17 of my family members were beheaded and cut into pieces?" Imam Sajjad was also the first person to perform his prayers on the sand of Karbala to keep the message of Imam Hussein alive. This custom exists until today.
The true Imam. At the beginning of Imam Sajjad's imamat, there was confusion among some people about the true Imam of the time. Some thought Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiya was the Imam, since he was older than Imam Sajjad. Also, in the past, imamat had been passed through brothers from Imam Hassan to Imam Hussein. Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiya was a son of Imam Ali and the younger brother of Imam Hussein, but was not from the progeny of the Prophet from Lady Fatima. To convince the people of the truth, Imam Sajjad and Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiya stood in front of the Kaaba and called the Hajar al-Aswad stone to testify to their imamat. The Hajar al-Aswad only responded to Imam Sajjad's call and testified to his imamat.
The uprising of Ibn Zubayr. Less than a year after the tragedy of Karbala, Abdullah ibn Zubayr started to rise against Yazid in Mecca. Although he was against Yazid, he sought power for himself by portraying an Islamic outlook. Ibn Zubayr was an opponent of Yazid's caliphate who had not paid allegiance to him.
After Imam Hussein's martyrdom,
Ibn Zubayr found a suitable opportunity to gather people around him. He was the son of Zubayr, one of the Prophet's companions, and the nephew of Aisha, the Prophet's wife. He opposed Imam Ali and his family, and had played a key role in instigating the Battle of Jamal against Imam Ali. Imam Ali had said, "Zubayr used to be with us, the Ahlul Bayt, until his ill-fated son, Abdullah, turned him against us." Battle of Al-Harra. Ibn Zubayr secretly sent his agents to encourage the people of Medina to pay allegiance to him. To overcome this plot, the governor of Yazid in Medina tried to influence the elderly of Medina by sending a group of them to visit Yazid in Damascus. The group received many gifts and hospitality from Yazid. However, upon returning to Medina, they informed the people that they had witnessed Yazid, their so-called caliph or successor of the Prophet, openly indulge in sinful behavior, intoxication, and womanizing. This led the people of Medina, the city of the Prophet, to rebel against Yazid and his family, the Umayyads. The people expelled Yazid's governor and approximately 1,000 of the Umayyads, including Marwan ibn al-Hakam, Even though Marwan was an open enemy to Imam Ali and his family and had a direct role in disrespecting Imam Hassan's body during his burial, he came to Imam Sajjad with a desperate request of entrusting his family, which the Imam accepted. When Yazid was informed about the rebellion in Medina, he sent his troops under the leadership of Muslim ibn Uqba to suppress it. This led to a battle on the outskirts of Medina called the Battle of Al-Harra, during which the people of Medina were defeated. The survivors withdrew and sought refuge in the mosque and tomb of the Prophet. Yazid's troops entered the holy mosque with their horses and created a bloodbath within it. Muslim ibn Uqba allowed his army to loot, rape, and steal from the people of Medina, the city of the Prophet, for 3 days. Around 10,000 people were murdered, including hundreds of Prophet's companions, as well as Islamic and Quranic scholars. Imam Sajjad was isolated during this uprising. He had moved his family, along with 400 people who sought refuge to him, to the outskirts of Medina. They had all remained safe. Muslim ibn Uqba had orders from Yazid to not get into a conflict with Imam Sajjad due to his isolation from the rebellion. Yazid knew of Imam's isolation through his spies. Yazid also wanted to avoid the shame the Umayyads had brought upon themselves from the tragedy of Karbala, so they did not interfere with Imam Sajjad. After 3 days, Muslim ibn Uqba ordered the people of Medina to come to his presence. He demanded they renew their allegiance to Yazid, bear witness that they are Yazid's servants, and threatened to kill anyone who opposed his order. However, he did not harm Imam Sajjad and excluded him from this order. When Imam Sajjad came to him, the Imam's greatness struck fear in Muslim ibn Uqba's heart. He stood up from his position, respected the Imam, and allowed him to return unharmed. Yazid's troops in Mecca. After the massacre in Medina, Yazid's army continued towards Mecca to suppress Ibn Zubayr's rebellion, despite the army leader, Muslim ibn Uqba, dying on the way due to an illness. Yazid's army outnumbered Ibn Zubayr's army and surrounded Mecca for a few months. They attacked Ibn Zubayr's army, who had sought refuge in the vicinity of the Kaaba, by shooting fireballs which burned the Kaaba. This event proved that Yazid would go to any extent to eliminate his opponents and highlighted the importance of Imam Hussein's decision to leave Mecca towards Karbala to keep the honor of the Kaaba and avoid bloodshed within it. During this period, Yazid's army received the news of Yazid's death, and they finally returned to Syria. During his short reign of only 3 years and 8 months, Yazid committed 3 outrageous crimes: the tragedy of Karbala, the massacre of Medina, and the burning of the Holy Kaaba. During the government of Ibn Zubayr. Muawiyah II in Damascus. The death of Yazid was a shock for the Umayyads, who had been in power for years. they tried to maintain their power by convincing the Syrians to pay allegiance to Muawiyah II, the 22-year-old and the oldest son of Yazid, as the new caliph.
When Muawiyah II appeared to deliver a speech to the people, he condemned the actions of his grandfather Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan and his father Yazid against the Ahlul Bayt, the progeny of the Prophet. He withdrew himself from the caliphate because he did not want to bear the sins of an unlawful government.
The Umayyads were shocked by his speech and blamed his teacher for his differing opinion. Even though Muawiyah's teacher rejected their claim, they still buried him alive. Muawiyah II also died less than 3 months later. Turmoil within the Umayyads.
Yazid's death and lack of unity in Syria provided Ibn Zubayr with an opportunity to expand his government and declare himself as the caliph.
He appointed some of the elderly to get allegiance from the people on his behalf from all around the Islamic territory. This led to a division among the Umayyads in Syria, where some were supportive of Ibn Zubayr's caliphate and some, under the leadership of Marwan ibn al-Hakam, were against him.
In a big battle known as Marjirahit,
which took place between the two sides, Marwan ibn al-Hakam defeated the other Umayyads, taking control of Syria.
Ibn Zubayr and the Imam.
Medina fell under the control of Ibn Zubayr. During his government, the pressure and cruelty on Imam Sajjad and Prophet's family increased. Although Ibn Zubayr and the Umayyads were against each other for the caliphate, both hated the Ahlul Bayt and their Shia followers. While the Umayyads followed Muawiyah's legacy of cursing Imam Ali from the pulpit, Ibn Zubayr said that he had hidden his hatred against the Prophet's family in his heart for 40 years. For 40 consecutive weeks, he removed the salutations to the Prophet from his Friday sermons because he did not want Banu Hashim to feel the pride of belonging to the Prophet's family. He imprisoned 26 of the Banu Hashim and threatened to burn them alive if they did not pledge allegiance to him.
In this situation, the Imam did not approve of Ibn Zubayr's government and was concerned about Ibn Zubayr's plots against the Shias.
The Imam continued his strategy to appear isolated from politics, and he did not involve himself in any activity that would benefit Ibn Zubayr or the Umayyads. The Tawabin's uprising. The division in power provided an opportunity for the Shia followers in Kufa to seek revenge for Imam Hussein's blood from his killers. The Shias were outraged to see the killers of Imam Hussein living freely in Kufa. They were in deep sorrow after the tragedy of Karbala, and they felt guilty for inviting Imam Hussein to Kufa but not supporting him. However, the Shia followers were split into two groups. One group
was under the leadership of Mukhtar al-Thaqafi,
a great warrior and a politician, who initially wanted to establish a government in Kufa and then proceed to fight against the Umayyads' army, which was under the leadership of Ibn Ziyad. The other group was called the Tawabin, or the Repenters, and was determined to seek revenge by waging a war against the Umayyad's army. They were under the leadership of Sulaiman ibn Surad al-Khuzai, a Shia scholar and a companion of the Prophet and the Imams.
The Tawabin could not gather more than 4,000 troops,
since many were leaning towards Mukhtar. They proceeded to the Battle of Ain al-Warda and were defeated by Ibn Ziyad's large army of around 30,000 troops, who tremendously outnumbered them. There is no historical evidence of any relationship between the Tawabin and Imam Sajjad. The Tawabin were ashamed to contact Imam Sajjad and invite him for an uprising, since they had invited his father, Imam Hussein, to Kufa, but had failed to support him. In addition, the Imam's strategy was to avoid open involvement in any political activity. He was living with a few supporters in Medina and was far from his Shia followers in Kufa. The Imam had said, "We as the Ahlul Bayt do not even have 20 people who love us within the entire cities of Mecca and Medina." Any political activity by the Imam would have endangered his life in Medina. Abdul Malik in power. Marwan ibn al-Hakam died with a very short reign in government of less than a year. He kept the Umayyad's governorship in his lineage. This lineage is known as the Banu Marwan. After his death, his son Abdul Malik assumed power. He proved to be a very cruel caliph and had appointed oppressive and tyrannical governors to suppress people in order to keep his government stable. Mukhtar's uprising. With the defeat of the Tawabin, Mukhtar found the opportunity suitable to initiate his uprising. He introduced himself as a representative of Muhammad ibn Hanafiya and was able to gather around 17,000 allegiances. The survivors of the Tawabin also joined his uprising. Mukhtar defeated Ibn Zubayr's governor in Kufa in a civil war and took control of the city. About 5 years after the tragedy of Karbala, Mukhtar took revenge from the Kufans who had been responsible for the tragedy. He sent his troops to fight against Abdul Malik's army, which was under the leadership of Ibn Ziyad. In the Battle of Al-Khazir, Mukhtar's troops defeated and killed Ibn Ziyad on the day of Ashura, exactly 6 years after the tragedy of Karbala. Mukhtar had a brief government of about 1.5 years and was eventually suppressed by Mus'ab, the brother of Abdullah ibn Zubair and his governor in Basra, Iraq. Upon his victory, Mus'ab ordered the beheading of around 7,000 of Mukhtar's troops who had surrendered and left Mukhtar without support. This incident showed the cruelty of Ibn Zubayr's caliphate against Shias and also highlighted that the Shias of Kufa were not fully dedicated to their faith and were still untrustworthy. Due to the political circumstances, the Imam did not directly endorse Mukhtar's movement. However, there are historical records that show his consent for the revenge for the blood of Imam Hussein. When a group of Shia followers from Kufa came to Imam Sajjad in Medina to inquire about the legitimacy of Mukhtar's uprising, the Imam said, "Even if a slave stands up for us, the Ahlul Bayt, the people must support him." The Imam then appointed his uncle, Muhammad ibn Hanafiya, to guide them on political matters. Also, when Mukhtar sent the head of Ibn Ziyad to Imam Sajjad, he fell into prostration and prayed for him. He then donated a large amount in charity to thank God for this event. After 6 long years, Imam Sajjad requested the ladies of Banu Hashim, who had been mourning for Karbala, to change out their black dresses and to come out of grief.
The Imam, symbol of true Islam.
While the Islamic territory was split between Abdul Malik and Ibn Zubayr, Abdul Malik feared the influence of Ibn Zubayr's propaganda on his people as they were going to Mecca to perform Hajj. Thus, with the help of bribed scholars, they fabricated fake narrations from the Prophet to encourage the people to perform Hajj at Masjid al-Aqsa in Palestine, which was in his territory, instead of Mecca. To fulfill this purpose, he also built the famous Dome of the Rock building in Masjid al-Aqsa. Under these circumstances, where any governor could change Islamic rituals in his favor, Imam Sajjad was a representative of the true Islamic values taught by the Prophet. The Imam tried to guide the bribed scholars and warned them about their actions. The Imam's powerful letter to Al-Zuhri, one of the bribed scholars, is narrated in history. Despite the ban enforced on narrations from the Holy Prophet since his demise, the Imam tried to inform the Muslims about the actual teachings of the Prophet through his advice and character. The Imam explained the true way of performing Hajj in his Manasik Hajj book in order to guide the Muslims who did not even know how to perform Hajj correctly. The Imam performed Hajj more than 20 times during his lifetime. When he wore the white garments of pilgrimage and said Labbaik to his Lord, he would faint. When he would regain consciousness, the people would ask him the reason for his loss of consciousness. The Imam would respond by saying, "I fear denial from my Lord, God." As a result, people would think that if the Imam of the time, the great-grandson of the Prophet, feared the acceptance of his Hajj, then what would become of their own Hajj? The downfall of Ibn Zubayr's government. After a few years of suppressing various rebellious uprisings around Syria, Abdul Malik moved his army towards Kufa. In the Battle of Deir al-Jathaliq, he defeated Mus'ab and took control of Iraq. When the proud Abdul Malik entered Kufa, he was presented with the head of Mus'ab in the town hall. A member of the audience said, "I was here in the town hall when the head of Imam Hussein was brought to Ibn Ziyad. The head of Ibn Ziyad for Mukhtar, the head of Mukhtar for Mus'ab, and now I see the head of Mus'ab in front of you." Abdul Malik, who feared that this historical pattern would repeat with his head being offered next, ordered the roof above them to be destroyed. After seizing Kufa, Abdul Malik sent his troops under the leadership of Hajjaj ibn Yusuf to conquer and suppress Ibn Zubayr in Mecca. Hajjaj surrounded Mecca for several months. Ibn Zubayr and his troops sought refuge in the vicinity of the Holy Kaaba, but Hajjaj ordered his troops to launch rocks at them. As a result, the Kaaba was entirely damaged. Abdullah ibn Zubayr was finally killed and his caliphate terminated after about 9 years. After a long unrest in Hijaz and Iraq, Abdul Malik was able to unify them under a single government. After the Holy Kaaba was heavily damaged, Imam Sajjad played a critical role in guiding the Muslims to rebuild the Kaaba. During the government of Abdul Malik. Banu Marwan and degradation of Islam. Yazid's public indulgence in sinful behavior made it a custom for the upcoming caliphs, including Banu Marwan, to also openly indulge in those behaviors. This legitimized their sinful behaviors for the public. Furthermore, years of civil unrest, battles, cruel governors, and elimination of the Islamic scholars had taken away any motivation for religious practices. Religion was no longer a priority for the people. It became publicly common, even in the holy cities of Mecca and Medina, to have open concerts by female singers, where many onlookers sought to womanize.
According to historical records, in one incident, there was a famous female singer in Medina who decided to perform Hajj, and her fans also accompanied her in large numbers. Upon entering Mecca and returning to Medina, the people gathered in crowds to welcome her, and she sang in public to please them.
In such a society, people were not interested in any religious guidance and would also ridicule any advice or teaching provided to them. The Imam had described his situation by saying that if we give them the teachings of the Prophet, they ridicule us. However, we cannot remain silent either. The Imam used every opportunity to guide the people. He held weekly Friday lectures in the mosque of the Prophet in Medina. The Imam's advice focused on the short duration of this life and the significance of the hereafter. The Imam's words would impact the people who would listen to him, cause tears to flow from their eyes, and touch their hearts.
Hajjaj in Medina. As a token of appreciation, Abdul Malik assigned Hajjaj as the governor of Medina. Hajjaj was a bloodthirsty man who would kill people for any excuse and had created a brutal and suppressive regime. He sought approval from Abdul Malik to kill Imam Sajjad. In a letter to Abdul Malik, he said, "If you want the stability and endurance of your government, kill Ali ibn al-Husayn, Imam Sajjad." Abdul Malik responded by warning against spilling the blood of Banu Hashim and said, "I have witnessed that when Yazid killed Imam Husayn, the government was removed from his lineage."
The Imam had knowledge of this communication. He wrote a letter to Abdul Malik to inform him about the content and the timing of his communication with Hajjaj, and that he had received this knowledge through the Prophet. The Imam wanted to let Abdul Malik know that he had complete knowledge of his government, and reminded him about his close ties and revelations through the Prophet. Ultimately, the Imam wanted to prohibit Abdul Malik from harassing him. Once Abdul Malik confirmed that the Imam's statement regarding the timing of his communication was accurate, he responded by sending gifts to the Imam as recognition. During this time, the Imam continued his isolation from politics. On one occasion, Abdul Malik met the Imam near the Holy Kaaba and complained to him about his distance from the Banu Marwan government, but the Imam rejected his request to come out of isolation.
Hajjaj in Iraq. Although Abdul Malik had control over the entire Islamic territory, there were various rebellions during his government, especially in Iraq. Thus, he assigned Hajjaj as the governor of Iraq. Once Hajjaj arrived in Kufa, he entered the mosque, removed the cover on his face, and threatened the people by saying that their heads were like ripe fruits ready to be cut. Hajjaj brutally suppressed the people of Iraq, especially when he doubted they were Shia. He fought for years with the Khawarij. He also battled the rebellion by his army commander, Ibn Ash'ath, which had been the biggest threat to the Umayyads before their destruction. In total, Hajjaj killed around 120,000 people outside of war and imprisoned tens of thousands of Iraqis during the 20 years of his government in Iraq until his death. The Imam did not support any side of these fights, since both sides were hostile against the Ahlul Bayt.
The Imam and the Islamic Promotion. During this situation, the Imam was planning an ideal Islamic government in the long term. His goal was to influence the people with his prayer and moral actions to attract them towards true Islamic teachings. The Imam also trained real Muslims in a society where everyone called themselves Muslims, yet did not abide by the prophetic values. The Imam illustrated the framework of an ideal Islamic government in his book, Risalat al-Huquq. Imam Sajjad was a symbol of prayer and piety in society. He fasted and prayed 1,000 units of prayer daily. His face would become pale in worship in the presence of God. His prayers would often remind people of the prayers of Imam Ali. Imam Sajjad had multiple honorable titles reflecting his worship. He was known as Sajjad, which means the one who prostrates abundantly, and Sayyid al-Sajidin, which means the master of prostrators. He received these titles because he was constantly in prostration and prayer to God for every blessing he had received. He was also known as Dhu Safanat, which means someone who has grown calluses or hard thickened skin on all places touching the ground while prostrating, and he used to treat his hardened skin twice a year.
He was also known as Zain al-Abidin, which means the adornment of the worshippers.
The Imam tried to attract the people to the true Islamic teachings. He wanted to open their relationship with God through the language of prayers. This was not suspicious for the government, nor did it repel the people. Many supplications have been narrated from the Imam, such as the famous supplication of Abu Hamza al-Thumali, which the Imam used to recite during the dawn of the month of Ramadan. A collection of 54 of the Imam's supplications is compiled in a book called Al-Sahifa al-Sajjadiyya. This book is the greatest Shia book after the Qur'an and Nahjul Balagha. It is also called Sister of the Qur'an, Gospel of the Holy Household, and the Psalms of Muhammad's progeny, which clearly indicate the importance of the book. In this book of supplications, the Imam expresses Islamic knowledge regarding various aspects of individual, social, political, and cultural life. The famous Makarim al-Akhlaq is just one of the supplications in Al-Sahifa al-Sajjadiyya.
Imam Sajjad also worked hard to raise Muslims with true Islamic values.
The Imam, who had started with only 3 companions, expanded to tens of companions during his lifetime. The names of more than 170 companions of the Imam are recorded in history. The Imam offered classes to teach Islamic lessons in the mosque of the Prophet and in his own home. He would purchase enslaved men whom he didn't need and would train them to become model Muslims. The Imam would even take them to Hajj with him, provide them with financial resources, and eventually free them into society. He would never keep any of them for more than a year, and every year, at the end of the month of Ramadan, he would free about 20 slaves. The men freed by the Imam are estimated to be in the thousands. The Imam's actions conveyed his message against the discrimination of slaves in society. Imam Sajjad taught how an ideal Muslim should act and live through his book, Risalat al-Huquq. In this book, the Imam stated 50 rights that every person should recognize and respect. These rights cover all of the rights involved in the relationships between an individual with God, an individual with himself, an individual with others. These rights include the rights of God and our deeds to Him, of different organs of the body, and of the social relationships such as family, various members of the society, and the government. Some of these rights are compulsory by Islamic rulings, but the majority of them are recommendations only identified in a true Muslim. Abdul Malik and the Imam. As time passed, Abdul Malik's power grew and so did his cruelty and oppression towards Imam Sajjad. He had spies to monitor the Imam's relations and all details of his personal and social life. In one incident, he sent a letter to the Imam and threatened him while asking for the sword of the Prophet. The Imam rejected his demand and ended his statement with the following verse from the Holy Quran, 31:18.
Verily, God does not love the proud and boastful.
The Imam then asked Abdul Malik to judge which one of them was more representative of this verse. In another incident, Abdul Malik summoned Imam Sajjad and ordered that he be brought to him in Damascus in chains. On the way, the Imam miraculously freed himself and voluntarily presented himself in Abdul Malik's palace. The Imam asked Abdul Malik firmly, "What business do you and I have together?" The Imam left the palace while Abdul Malik was in great shock and fear.
Hisham ibn Abdul Malik in Hajj. One year, Abdul Malik sent his son Hisham to perform Hajj in Mecca. When Hisham was near the Kaaba, he decided to touch Hajar al-Aswad, the heavenly rock, but he was unable to reach it due to the crowd. Shortly after, while watching the Kaaba, he noticed Imam Sajjad coming through the crowd. The crowd moved away in respect to the Imam and made room for him to reach Hajar al-Aswad. Hisham felt offended by the great respect people had shown to the Imam and pretended not to know the Imam. A poet named Farazdaq, who had close ties to Banu Marwan's government, witnessed this incident and told Hisham, "I know that man and can describe him for you." He then recited a long and beautiful poem describing and praising the Imam. Hisham became angry and ordered that Farazdaq's allowance from Bayt al-Mal, public treasury, be cut and that he be imprisoned.
After his custody was lengthened, Farazdaq requested the Imam to pray for his release. He was released and came to the Imam and told him that his allowance was stopped by the government. The Imam provided him with an allowance, even though Farazdaq was hesitant to accept it. The Imam gave him the amount of allowance for a specific number of years and told him, "If I knew that you would need more, I would definitely provide you with more." Upon the completion of the specific number of years, Farazdaq passed away.
During the government of Walid, Walid in power. Abdul Malik died after 21 years of being in power. His son Walid replaced him. Walid was a cruel and stubborn character who lacked literacy of the Arabic language and would make obvious mistakes in his speech. In his first sermon as the caliph, he told the people that whoever stands against him would be beheaded, while whoever keeps silent and obeys his orders would die a natural death. He also kept Hajjaj in his position as the governor of Iraq. The majority of his reign was spent in military campaigns and the expansion of his territories into northern Africa, India, Central Asia, and Andalusia in Europe. The Imam and Hisham ibn Ismail. Walid replaced the cruel governor of Medina, Hisham ibn Ismail, who had oppressed and harassed the people of Medina, and particularly Imam Sajjad. Hisham was persecuted for his atrocities and was tied in public, where people could take revenge. Hisham said that he feared Imam Sajjad more than anyone else, since he had been the most oppressive towards the Imam. When the Imam and his companions passed by Hisham, the Imam asked his companions not to insult him. The Imam greeted Hisham, treated him respectfully, and offered him help. By this treatment, Hisham was deeply ashamed. When the Imam left him, Hisham recited the following verse from the Holy Quran, chapter 6, verse 124. "God knows best where to place his prophethood." This was one of many examples of how the Imam had influenced the hearts of the people by his actions.
Martyrdom. Imam Sajjad's efforts to guide the Muslims and reconstruct the Islamic society had made him the center of attention and respect from the Muslims. For example, the famous reciters of Quran in Medina would not leave for Hajj until Imam Sajjad left the city and they would follow him in large numbers.
and the people would not return until the Imam left Mecca. The Umayyads, who were afraid for their own power, could not tolerate the Imam's social popularity and influence among the people. Thus, Hisham ibn Abd al-Malik, who hated the Imam due to his observations at Hajj, encouraged his brother Walid to order the poisoning of the Imam. After Imam Sajjad was poisoned, he called his children and chose his son Muhammad as his successor in imamate. He addressed him with the title of Baqir. Imam Sajjad gave him a heavy chest passed down from the imams. The chest was full of holy books, scriptures, and the swords of the Prophet and Imam Ali. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam spoke to his son Imam Baqir alayhi salam in private for some time. Among his last words, the Imam emphasized the importance of kindness to the people. He also told Imam Baqir what his father Imam Hussein had passed down to him on the day of Ashura, which was to avoid oppressing someone who has nobody but God to defend him. Then the Imam became unconscious. When he regained consciousness, he recited the chapters of Waqi'ah and Fath from the Holy Quran. The chapter of Waqi'ah describes the Day of Judgment and the categorization of the people on that day. The chapter of Fath describes the Treaty of Hudaybiyah, during which the Muslims achieved victory peacefully. The Imam then recited the following verse, chapter 39, verse 74. Praise be to God, who has fulfilled His promise to us and made us inherit the land, enjoying paradise as we please. How excellent is the reward of the workers. Then his soul ascended and he passed away on the 25th of Muharram in the year 95 Hijri at the age of 58. Burial. While preparing the body of the Imam for burial, calluses were found on his back from carrying sacks of food. The Imam used to distribute food secretly at night to around 100 needy families of Medina. After the Imam's martyrdom, people discovered that their livelihoods had been coming from him. This was in addition to the two occasions where the Imam had split his entire wealth with the needy in the way of God. The Imam's martyrdom brought grief to the entire city of Medina. The people of Medina gathered in a large crowd for his funeral. The Imam was buried in the Baqi cemetery within the vicinity of his uncle Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Conclusion. Imam Sajjad is one of the Imams with the longest duration of imamate. He lived in a critical and complex political situation. When studying the life of Imam Sajjad, one can divide his imamate into two different periods. The first period begins at Karbala on the day of Ashura, continues to Kufa and Damascus, and ends with the Imam's return to Medina. The second period begins after his return to Medina and lasts until his martyrdom, a period of about 34 years. During the first period,
The tragedy of Karbala was the biggest sorrow of the Ahlul Bayt, the progeny of the Prophet. Although Imam Sajjad was very sick and in captivity, he did not fear for his life and knew that his silence would fade the message of Karbala. He spoke up against Ibn Ziyad and Yazid, condemned their actions, and confronted their justifications. The Imam also tried to awaken the people by delivering subjective lectures. The Imam's lecture for the people in Kufa was focused on condemning their actions during the tragedy of Karbala. His focus in Damascus was to familiarize them with the Ahlul Bayt, and in Medina, he reminded them of the heartbreaking losses to the Ahlul Bayt. The Imam's lectures pressured Yazid to deny his role in the tragedy of Karbala and free the captives and cause the people to doubt the government. This contributed to the subsequent political unrest in the Islamic territory. The second period of the life of Imam Sajjad in Medina was during a long period of wars and uprisings. It was as if God had punished the people responsible for the tragedy of Karbala. This punishment was not limited to just the killers of Imam Hussein, but everyone whose reluctance or approval led to the tragedy of Karbala from all around the Islamic territory. The Iraqis who had left Imam Hussein without support and killed him in Karbala suffered the most. They endured various wars, uprisings, and brutal governors. The Imam isolated himself from politics and put all of his efforts into saving the lives of his followers in the endless wars for power. Any political activity in this time would endanger the Imam's life, since the fugitive rulers were looking for any excuse to remove the Imam and stabilize their own governments. The Imam was one of the closest living blood relatives to the Prophet. He was the only light of guidance in a society that was lacking interest in Islamic teachings due to long wars, political unrest, and cruel governors. The Imam knew that it was not possible to establish an ideal Islamic government in the near future, so he decided to plan for such a society in the long term through various efforts. The Imam attracted Muslims to the true Islamic teachings by his prayers, behavior, and supplications, such as Al-Sahifa Al-Sajjadiyya. The Imam's supplications would not make the government suspicious nor repel the people. The Imam taught true Islamic values to his companions and the freed slaves so they would become true representatives of such an ideal society. He also depicted the framework of this ideal society with his book Risalat al-Huquq. With the Imam's martyrdom, the first Islamic century was almost over. The true Islamic teachings and values that were established by the Prophet had faded away gradually after his demise, so much so that nothing could stop the so-called Muslims from attaining their political interests, even if they had to brutally kill his dear grandson in Karbala or destroy the Kaaba, the holiest site in Islam. Imam Sajjad reconstructed the Islamic foundation from the beginning, similar to what the Prophet had done at the beginning. Imam Sajjad's efforts led the people to recognize the Shia Imams as the true representatives of Islam and prepared an environment for Imam Baqir to establish a seminary in Medina to provide deep Islamic knowledge for the people who were eager for it.
Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. Three things would save a believer: holding one's tongue from backbiting and ill talks about people, engaging in activities which would benefit this world and hereafter, feeling guilt and seeking forgiveness for mistakes.